Hello and welcome to the Gambling Files podcast. I'm your co-host, John Bruford, joined by my co-host, Fintan Costello. Hello, Fintan.
Hola, John.
You just spoke foreign to me.
That was my attempt at Spanish. Yeah.
Why would you do that?
Because, humble brag time, I'm currently sitting in Spain. I always get them mixed up. Am I in Malaga or Marbella? I can't remember. One sec. I'm in Marbella.
Oh.
Yeah.
What are you doing in Marbella?
I'm a guest at the EGR Power affiliate event in a lovely 5-star resort in Marbella.
Power affiliate?
Yeah. Yeah, big time.
What the fuck does that mean?
So EGR every year they do a Power 50 list of the top 50 operators. So they rank the operators 1 to 50. So it's kind of like your Forbes rich list kind of thing, but for gambling operators. And then they've got a spin-off of that where they rank the affiliates. And Bonus Finder made the list. We made the cut last year. And because we made the cut, this is my second EGR event as a guest. I have been to one many, I think one of the first affiliate ones when I was at Google. But I had to speak. I had to earn my dinner, so I had to do a presentation.
But you didn't mention where you came in that top 50, so I'm thinking high 40s?
No, so the affiliate list is shorter. So there's only 25 on the list, and I think...
24th.
I think we were close. So whatever Michael Jordan's number was... hang on a second. What's Michael Jordan's number? I can't remember where we came. 23. Yeah, solid 23.
Well, you're in there, I guess.
It counts.
Crikey.
Yep.
Well, that's good for you.
I'd love to take all the credit. It's the team who do all the work. I just get to do the 5-star bit.
But are you staying somewhere quite posh then?
Oh yeah, it's like this is like a proper 5-star, 4 seasons run resort where it's like, you know, 20 quid for a beer kind of thing.
Nice.
Mm.
So do they have nicer coffee, for example?
Yeah, you get one of those really fancy coffee machines in your bedroom. There's a really well-stocked minibar. The service is just...
But does the coffee machine in the room come with a barista?
It doesn't come with a barista, but luckily, as we talked about before this call, I am technically a qualified barista.
Do you like the way that I came around to that, though?
I knew you were going to work it in somehow. So the backstory to the barista qualification is myself and my wife, we lived in Barcelona for about 6 to 9 months. And then I took a job with with Poker Stars in the Isle of Man. So we moved from Barcelona to the Isle of Man.
Very similar.
It's literally the opposite is the only way to describe it. I don't think it stopped raining from when we landed to when we left. But one of the things we really enjoyed in Barcelona was you go out, you get a really nice coffee, you have some food. You know, it's a very kind of cafe culture outside, great food, great coffee. Particularly if you kind of stay away from the touristy bits and stuff like that. And we couldn't get a good coffee in the Isle of Man. And coffee had kind of become really important, kind of like morning ritual for us or like a lunchtime thing or something at the weekend. So I did a bunch of research, as I do, and I bought a really good coffee machine. So I've got this fantastic coffee machine and... got the beans, got the grinder, got the whole shebang. But then I couldn't make a good coffee either. So my wife is Australian. And every year we go to Australia most years we go to Australia for Christmas. And we kind of do like an extended holiday. So the Australians take coffee incredibly seriously. So the cafe culture and the brunch culture anywhere in Australia is phenomenal. So I did what in Australia they call a TAFE. So it's in the UK, it'd be like the City and Guilds kind of thing. So I did a 2-day TAFE course and I've got a level 3 or a level 4 barista training qualification. So you're in this big room full of coffee machines, really good baristas, and you just spend like basically 20 hours making coffee and learning all about the grinding and how to make good coffee and how to foam milk and the different types of milk and the different types of coffees and latte art and all that kind of stuff. So yeah. And so I could go back to the Isle of Man and make a proper espresso in the morning for breakfast.
Just if anybody from the Isle of Man is listening and you know somewhere to get nice coffee on the Isle of Man, please do write in.
Dude, look, I tried. Now, it's been a long time since I've lived there, and things have probably progressed a little bit. But there was even an Italian cafe, and the coffee was shit. So I'm very confident that when I lived in the Isle of Man, there was no good coffee in the Isle of Man. I'll happily die on that hill.
So years ago I was living in London, and when I was living in London, when I first got there, I'd been working for a magazine publisher in Exeter, and they had gone bust. And so when my redundancy came through, I moved into a shared flat in Hammersmith in West London. And nice. While I was looking around for publishing work, I started working at the pub over the road. And it was what had been like a proper working men's pub, you know, two separate bars, one for the ladies.
Nice. I like that.
And it was just a proper old school drinking pub.
Mm-hmm.
And they did this million plus pound refurb, which, you know, bear in mind, this is 23, 24 years ago. It's a very expensive refurb on a pub. Million pound refurb, right? But for some reason, kept the same landlady and landlord, which was just bizarre. Anyway, they got a fancy coffee machine. People kept ordering coffee, but nobody had been trained to use it. So people would just get a shit cup of coffee. And then eventually they trained us. And so I had about a 20-minute training course on this thing and continued to make horrendous coffee, but it at least looked a bit like what they'd requested.
You knew what you were doing wrong.
Yeah, basically I knew that it was really bad. But actually that pub was where my bar colleague Colin came up with the wonderful game of, because we used to get these guys in from, on a Friday night, they come in from a couple of businesses around the corner. You had EMI Records and AOL. They were both just around the corner, and they would come piling out of there, stand 8-9 deep at the bar all night from 5 o'clock until kicking out time. 6 hours of absolute madness, right?
Mm-hmm.
And my mate Colin, he says, right, we're going to have a bit of fun tonight. What we're going to do is, if you serve somebody the wrong drink, you get a point.
Mm.
So basically, and it stopped me if I've shared this before.
You have. This is a new one for me. I can't wait.
So Colin, he's like, okay, so here's an example. Somebody orders a Diet Coke. You give them a full fat Coke, you got a point. The more audacious the drink that you get away with, the more points you get, right? Now, I was doing the obvious one, slimline tonic for full fat tonic, that kind of thing, you know, which looking back is probably slightly dangerous in some instances. But you know what? Screw it, because it was horrendous on a Friday night and they were awful, awful people. Anyway, it's the Brook Green Hotel, if anybody listening used to work at AOL or EMI 23 years ago. Colin, this is no word of a lie. I saw this with my own eyes. Because through the night, people are getting more and more drunk. And I saw him just before closing time. This guy was getting a last round of drinks in. The guy ordered lager and lime. Colin served him a pint of cider and blackcurrant.
I like this guy.
But the bloke was like, oh, what's that? He goes, cider and blackcurrant. Did I order that? Yep. It's just like, Colin just shut him down. Yep. And the bloke was just like, oh, all right, cheers. And just took him, walked off. It was amazing. God, yeah. Those are the days.
But there is nothing like that kind of after work on a Friday, everybody in the office gets up as one unit and, like, you know, stampedes to the pub to complain about that shit boss or whatever it is. There's, like, I've got so many memories of that over the years. I like
it. I've got a feeling Google's offices were just around the corner as well, but maybe not at that time.
I'm not sure. I know they were in Buckingham Palace Road for ages, but I'm not sure where they were before that.
This is just around the corner from Brook Green, but I can't remember what the name of the road was.
So I'm thinking it's kind of pre-IPO, which they did have a much smaller office in London. Back in the very, I had a boss and a couple of people who were kind of, you know, employees, I don't know, like first tenant UK employees kind of thing. And they did have a tiny little office somewhere else before they became giants.
Astride us like a colossus.
Just take everybody's marketing budget, basically. It's amazing. It's a great business. Amazing margins. So, John, I've got a problem. I need your help.
What?
So... I've spent the last however year or whatever talking about Marathon, the Saab MDS, my 250K adventure in the desert.
Yeah, and that's not how far it was. That's how much it cost to enter.
You're probably not far off, actually. When you buy like all the ultra lightweight Gucci kit, it definitely adds up. So I'm back. I use it as an excuse to not train, and now I've done no exercise in, like, I don't know, 3 weeks. I'm putting on weight. I'm bored. I'm not sleeping properly. And I'm starting that little downward spiral. So what I need is, and what I need your help with is, I need my next challenge. So it needs to be something really interesting, something that's kind of on the scary end of the spectrum in terms of I actually have to train for it, and I can't just kind of, like, I don't know, wing it or show up and bluff my way through it. And I need some help. So I've got an idea, and I like it, but I don't know if it's the one I'm going to go for.
Bring it. What is it?
So it's in Las Vegas. I think they're called Tough Mudder in America. It's a 24-hour obstacle course race in Las Vegas out in the desert.
Ooh, that does sound good.
So what I like about it is it's 24 hours. So, you know, most people these days have done some sort of obstacle course race. So what I like about it is it's, you know, it's 24 hours. So you've got to train properly for it. It's an obstacle course race, so it's full body. So it's not just about running. I've got to do, you know, I've got to be able to do the monkey bars, with, I don't know, climb ropes, climb over a wall, swim, and stuff like that. So I've got to do a proper, you know, like, my grip strength needs to be really good, not just my legs.
I know how to work on that.
I've been married for a long time, so do I. I'm only joking, darling, if you're listening. She's not listening. She doesn't care about this.
No, she's not listening.
She doesn't give a shit. She's there's no way you could pay her to listen to even more of her husband.
She's listening for me, though.
She probably is. That stud, John. I can't wait to meet him. So that's one idea I've got right now.
When she's criticizing you to me, she's always like, he's just got too much hair. I've just been longing for a slap-headed dwarf.
May, if you want to chip into the rent, you feel free. We can. Yeah, that's fine. So that's my idea. I don't know if it's strong enough. I don't know if it's, like, scary enough.
That is going to be extremely hard.
It is, but is it? Is it really?
Yes.
It's an obstacle course race. They're not that hard.
No, but they are for 24 hours.
The 24 hours bits is hard. And yeah, so I kind of get it. So that's what I'm saying. Like, I think it is strong enough. And I think you, because with these things as well, right, you also need the bragging rights, right? So like, if I say, like, oh, I did like an ultra marathon in Morocco, or, you know,
I did a multi-stage race in the Sahara Desert, right? So you've got that kind of bragging rights escalation thing. So there's definitely a bragging rights to, I did a 24-hour obstacle course race. So I quite like that.
You can throw another factor in, though.
Go for it.
Something like, you know, I did a 24-hour obstacle course in the Nevada Desert, and I was only wearing scorpions.
I thought you were going to say Speedos.
Nope. Actual scorpions.
And I was going to say, I'm in. Damn it, you've got me. I'm going to get Tiger Prince Speedos. And I'm going to do it in Speedos.
Well, you could paint your scorpions.
I could paint it scorpions. I don't think we need the scorpions. I don't get that bit. I'm not into that kind of pain.
They won't necessarily sting you.
To just have a pocket full of well-fed scorpions? Or like,
have any pockets. You have to stick them to your skin to cover the parts that you would get arrested for showing.
Oh, okay. So instead of my sock, which exactly. is a joke all the listeners are going to get later on. Okay, so look, scorpions aside, any other, you know, you know a lot about running. Any other ideas?
Well, what I was going to suggest when you started down this path was actually that you do, arguably, it's not the ultimate posh kid sport, but it's the ultimate accessible posh kid sport, which is triathlon. And I was going to suggest, because anybody can do an Ironman, and I know that people look at Ironman and think, I couldn't possibly do that. Anybody can do an Ironman. The cutoffs for Ironman are generally actually quite generous. I mean, fundamentally, for most of the marathons, you've got about 7 hours.
Yeah, but you got to survive. Generous. Yeah, but that's 7 hours after the swim and a fucking 100-mile bike ride. Like,
yeah, but the swim's going to take...
You're not going to walk a marathon in 7 hours.
Yeah, you can.
Can you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you might have to run a bit of it.
6K an hour.
Most people...
You could. You can do 6K an hour, so you can do a marathon in 7 hours. You're right, yeah.
What's 6K an hour in miles per hour?
I have no idea.
Well, me neither.
Let me Google it for
real
you.
Figures.
Sorry, man. Let me put my beer down and figure this out for you. 6 kilometers in miles. There we go. It is 3.7 miles.
That's a very fast walk.
No, it's not.
It really is a very fast walk. Most people, on average, walk less than 3 miles an hour. People always overestimate how fast they walk. You wouldn't believe.
Unless you've trained your walk, like somebody on this podcast, to be able to walk faster for your ultra marathon races. Just throwing that out there.
Well, I've never done that.
Yeah, I've done it.
Whoa. But I wasn't thinking Ironman, because Ironman, do you know what I mean?
Ironman's
just a numbers game.
You're thinking Deca or whatever it's called, like multiple Ironmans?
Well, the very specific race that I had in mind was the Double Brutal. There are harder full distance races out there, but the Double Brutal is, two Ironmans kind of back to back. And a chap I know tried it, and he was a mess.
Let's check the elevation. Hang on a sec.
It is in Wales as well, if I remember correctly. It's in Snowdonia, I think.
So it's 2.4 miles swim, 112 mile bike ride.
Then a marathon.
Finally, you run 3 lake laps. Must be 2 marathons, right? For the double.
Well, yeah, but the 2.4 miles, that's a standard distance, isn't it?
Oh, no, sorry, hang on a sec. That's I'm reading the wrong one.
Now is it the Seriously Brutal? Oh. Hang on.
They've got some cool stuff.
They've got some great.
It's the swimming. Oh, fuck, I can't be our swimming. But they've got a duathlon, which is interesting.
But that's what makes it interesting and difficult.
No, it's
doing something that you don't like and that you're not good at. For me, it's the bike.
I know you're right. Fuck. What about duathlon. Midnight Mountain Marathon. No, that's too easy.
I think Fern did that a couple of years ago. But, you know, there's some good races out there.
Yeah. So my difficulty with it is, so there's a couple of things. So there's some constraints I've got, or some challenges, extra challenges I've got. So one is I really can't be arsed swimming. It's just not convenient. Which I know is a bit kind of a, you know.
I want it to be really tough. Oh, yeah, but I don't like that.
Yeah, it is. Well, look, the reality is I've also got a day job and I've got a wife and a son, right? So I can't just like, because this is the problem with any race involving cycling or swimming, because my swimming's so bad, I'll need to swim every day kind of thing. But the logistics of getting to a swimming pool, swimming, getting out of the pool, you know, so you add an hour onto every training session. So you're kind of looking at a minimum of a, you know, 2-3 hour commitment for just like even the most basic swim. The bike's kind of the same problem, because if you're doing any long distance cycling, it's not like a 3 hour bike ride. Like a long distance training for a long distance, any sort of long distance bike riding is like, well, you're doing this for the next 6 hours.
Yeah, that is true.
You know, so I'm entering divorce territory at that point, which is why I totally get you. I agree. It's kind of, you should do it because it's difficult. You should do it because it's uncomfortable.
You've got to leave your comfort zone, really.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's why I did the desert, because I hate the heat. Like, I really, really hate the heat.
Yeah, but right. Okay, so the Nevada thing, that's going to be in the desert as well.
It's going to be in the desert.
For that one is it's high elevation. And as you are aware, deserts get pretty cold at night. And you're going to have to be going right through that.
Yeah, so I'm fine with that. I'm also fine with it from a perspective of I've got no upper body strength. And even though like I can do 20 push-ups, I can't do one pull-up. Like I can't even get close to doing a pull-up. So I'm massive gaps in my strength.
I've got no idea if I can do a pull-up.
Most people can't. Because again, a lot of it's grip strength as well. And if, you know, me and you, we spend all day at computers typing kind of thing. So, it's completely different. So it's hard enough, but I can also kind of balance the, you know, it's a mixture of running and a couple of hours in the gym every day, which is time wise far easier to do.
Well, I can keep your missus happy while you're training.
That's my fucking good fucking luck. If you figure it out, tell me.
She's definitely not going to be listening.
This is big man on campus now. She's not listening to this. You're amazing, darling. I love you so much. I'm only joking. I think it's the best one, but I am looking for that one that kind of grabs me and kind of goes, yeah, this is the one you really need to do. So I did have another one,
yeah,
which was maybe, and then I want to talk to you about it. So I've done the desert, so I've done the heat. The opposite is the cold.
That's true.
There's a race in the Swedish Arctic Circle. That's about 150 miles, which is something ridiculous in kilometers. It sounds less when you say it in miles. 240K and change. You have to do a survival course. You've got to go out the week before the race and do a survival course if you're not familiar with being out in the snow. And I quite like the idea of that one too. Because I think it's a nice balance. You got the yin, you got the like, okay, I've done the big distance in the snow and I've done the big distance in the sand. I thought that was quite cool. And it's pretty much
both.
Well, there's something, I think it like doing this race would kind of be a nice kind of balance to the MDS. And to be honest with you, it'll probably be harder because the snow can really fucking kill you. Where at least with the heat, you just kind of hang around a bit and the temperature drops.
I think you should do the Vegas one and the snow one.
Oh. Okay. Which gives me time to train for the snow. Because the thing about doing that kind of distance, because it's not a stage race, it's just like the gun goes and you're off. So there's no like camp or whatever. You're just kind of out there till you're done. So it's definitely a harder slog.
Yeah, definitely.
And like your water bottles freeze and all this kind of stuff. So it's pretty cool. All right, I'll do both.
Great. That's settled.
Thanks, John.
Is there anything else we need to talk about? Hey, you know what we could talk about?
We've got some guests.
Yeah.
The guests?
Let's talk about them. Two guests this episode. We have got Jay Sater. Jay is a lawyer from India. And he's one of the people behind the Gateway to Gaming website, which is full of information about the Indian gambling market. And Jay...
And his website is g2g.news.
Oh, yeah? Good membrane.
Yeah.
And Jay just basically educates us about the state of things in India. So if you've got any interest in India and what's happening, what's opening up, the tax situation as well, he covers that. Yeah, it's really interesting, and he's a lovely guy.
He was phenomenal. He was super knowledgeable. He's got an amazing skincare routine. Doesn't like to talk about it, but we've asked him for recommendations on what moisturizer he's using.
Seriously, right? I met Jay at ICE, I use some of G2G's content in Casino International because it's very, very good. And so I met up with Jay when he was over for ICE, and when I met him, I was just like, are you Jay's son? I mean, how is this even, but he could easily pass for a teenager. And I'm not saying like he looks a bit young. He could easily pass for a teenager. He must get ID'd when he's buying fucking sweets.
I'm jealous.
It's
because you got that amazing kind of like, because he's clearly aging really well, and then you've got that powerful legal brain that goes with it, and he's just the full package. It's brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, don't know about you, I hate the guy.
I think it's great. It's good for him.
Well, look at you being all big hearted.
I'm nothing but heart
and hair.
All right.
And then after Jay, we're joined by Jay. I'm just kidding. I don't hate you at all. We're joined by Jennifer Gaynor, a returning guest, talking about all things Vegas. So Vegas, this time we are discussing the Palms reopening. We're talking the property acquisition by that nice Mr. Fertitta. We're talking about the Vegas Grand Prix and sports in general. And we're talking about all those dead bodies in Lake Mead.
And Las Vegas is sexiest show.
And Las Vegas sexiest show. Now with wipe clean seating.
And John tells some massively inappropriate jokes. And
I don't remember any inappropriate jokes.
Luckily, Jennifer laughed and didn't just hang up. So yeah, we did really well today.
I only did the really rude stuff before we started recording.
Did you?
Well, yeah, that was when you made the mistake of telling me that the event you're at in Spain is sea level.
Oh, and you tell me what C stands for? And I laughed and said, yes, I'm definitely one of those Cs.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. I remember that. Sorry. It took me a minute.
But that's the only inappropriate thing I've said whilst Jennifer was on the line.
I disagree, and I will leave it up to the listeners to decide.
On with the episode. Oh, actually, Fintan, there was something I wanted to ask.
Go for it.
I was listening to the AG Brief podcast.
Oh, yeah. Those amazing people. Was, they're fantastic.
So it was Sharon, and she was talking to a chap about Japan.
Oh, yeah.
And they've got really sexy music on there. Should we get some sexy music?
Can we? Can we get a jingle?
Well, we could probably get a jingle, or we could buy some stock music, which will cost us next to nothing.
But I want like, okay, stock music sounds great. What kind of stock music though? Are we thinking like 80s well, power ballad stock music or what?
Well, no, theirs was like a sexy news kind of thing. Kind of thing.
Okay. Maybe we could play with that.
But I mean, now that you said, can we get a jingle? I'm like, we could have like the Gambling Files podcast.
I've got another, I'm going to send you a thing to listen to. I've got something completely different in mind.
Huh. Okay. I just assumed that you'd go for some kind of crooner type thing.
No, I'm not really. I've got an idea. I've got an idea, but you've got a better instinct for these things. So you'll tell me why I'm wrong, and then we'll go whatever you had in mind. Which is usually how these things work.
This is a democracy.
No, it's not.
It's a seamocracy.
It's a seamocracy. I'm surrounded by seas. Ah!
And you know what that C stands for. Yeah, on with the episode. Enjoy. And we move on to our first guest. And before I introduce our first guest, Fintan, have you ever been to India?
I've never been to India.
Okay. Have you ever seen the best exotic marigold hotel?
No.
Fuck. Have you ever eaten a curry?
I have.
Brilliant. Then I'm sure you're going to have some questions for our first guest, Jay Sater. Gaming and technology lawyer based in Mumbai. Jay, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, John and Fintan, for having me.
Absolutely. Our pleasure. Now, to give just a little bit of background, I know Jay because in Casino International, the magazine I edit for the industry, we have sort of editorial partners in different countries, just, you know, a great way to find expertise. It's mutually beneficial kind of thing. And we've been dealing with a website that Jay is involved with called Gateway to Gaming. And the two is a two. I pronounced it as a two, Gateway to Gaming. And that covers, all sorts of things about gambling law, about the regulatory side of things in India. And it's a really excellent resource and I do highly recommend it. Jay, how are you?
Thank you, John, for the kind words. I'm doing very well. Thank you. Just been hectic, past few weeks in India for the industry, and that keeps us all busy. I'm sure we'll talk about all of that.
I wasn't planning on talking about it, but now that you've brought it up, looking at the land-based industry in India, right at the moment. Is it true that all of the casinos are in the region of Goa?
So there are, much like USA, in India also gambling is a state subject. So it goes state-wise. And there are 29 states in India. So every state is pretty much free to draft their own policies or their laws on gambling, betting, casinos, and online gaming, etc. As you guys and the listeners of this podcast might be aware, India is developing, but we are also into traditions and customs and morals and so on. It's a slightly conservative society, so to speak, sure. Compared to the West, at least. So probably people are not yet ready to accept gambling and betting or see it like a vice, which is pretty much seen as not good. And most of the states out of the 29 I mentioned, more or less prohibit most forms of gambling or betting. There is some catch over there. There are a few activities that are allowed. While I say that gambling and betting is prohibited by most of the states, but when you talk about casinos, brick and mortar casinos, there are two states which actually allow casinos and have casinos allowed purely for the purpose of promoting tourism. Both these states heavily rely on tourism for their economy. They're very tiny states. One of them, as you said, is Goa on the western tip. Another one is Sikkim, which is in the northeast. It is the smallest state in India by population, near the Himalayas. It's slightly difficult to get there as well. So these are the only two regions or states in India which have casinos.
So hang on, Jay.
Right.
Hang on. So I knew the Goa bit. I was not aware of the Sikkim bit, which, you know, I'm accepting of my own ignorance. I'm coming at this from the wrong angle. Hang on. Are the casinos in Sikkim, is that because of its proximity to the Himalayas and people traveling to the Himalayas? Is that a tourism-based one as well?
Yeah, that is a tourism-based one as well. It's a really beautiful state. I have been there a number of times with a view of the snow-capped Himalayas when you go there. So, both these states are where tourists go frequently. And interestingly, both these states have banned locals residing in those states from playing in the casinos. So, for example, in Goa, if you have a local ID of Goa, you are not allowed. At least that's what the rule says. They have not implemented it so far. Same in Sikkim. If you have a local ID, you are not allowed to play. It's only for tourists, that is persons from outside that state or foreigners. So that's how they have sold the policy, and that's how, you know, people have kind of accepted it and not opposed it so much, because, like I said, it's seen very negatively otherwise. So they have this policy purely for the purpose of promoting tourism in the state.
Okay. Now, what sort of size are the casinos that we're talking about? What kind of properties are we talking about? What's in Goa? What's in Sikkim?
Right. So in Goa, there are two kind of casino licenses and two different categories of casinos. Under the law, it's a slightly, you know, befuddling law, because as it's frequently said, politicians and lawmakers, they rarely work on logic. Governments rarely work on logic. But Goa has two categories of casino. One is electronic gaming, which happens, for which you can take a license if you are a registered 5-star hotel in the state. So any 5-star hotel in the state can obtain a casino license, an onshore casino license, which can only have slot machines or electronic games, machine-based games. Then there is a second category of license for offshore vessels, which is again parked in the river Mandovi on the capital city near Panjim, where, you know, it's just moored in the river. So I don't understand the logic why they are called offshore casinos or why to have a separate category. But that apart, if you board one of these ships, there are six of them in Goa, you can have both electronic and live gaming. All sorts of games are available in these six offshore casinos in Goa. And there are about 10 or 12 land-based casinos in 5-star hotels where you can only have electronic gaming. So this is about Goa. Now, Sikkim, there is no river, there is no sea in Sikkim. So there is just one category of license, which is if you are a 5-star hotel, you are eligible to apply for a license, and you can have all sorts of gaming, electronic, live, etc. As long as you don't allow locals, as I mentioned, you can have casinos in any 5-star property in the state. And currently, there are three casinos in 5-star properties in Sikkim. So 10 plus 6 plus 3, so around 19 or 20 casinos are currently functioning in India in total. And one thing, I would also like to mention that Meghalaya, another state in the northeast, has also passed a law allowing gaming and sports betting as well as casinos within the state. Again, with the same condition that local residents of Meghalaya won't be allowed to play. Outsiders are welcome to play. They are in the process of issuing the final licenses. They have issued provisional licenses to allow, casinos. Three provisional licenses have been issued. So third state would be opening up soon for casinos. Again, it's a very tiny state in Northeast where casinos would be up shortly if everything goes okay. If the policies and the final approvals come through, there would be casino in Meghalaya as well in let's say by the end of this year or within this year. And apart from that, few other states are also considering this same policy, similar policy for tourism, allowing casinos in the states while for outsiders of the states. So Pondicherry, Maharashtra, then there is a union centrally administered territory called Daman and Diu. So few states are actually also looking at this, but there is nothing concrete at the moment. So at the
Hang on. So it's not for non-Indians. It's just not for people in that state.
Yeah, just for not people in that state.
It's so interesting. So in the US, right? You know, in the US, you got Foxwoods.
Yes.
I mean, the genius thing about Foxwoods when it opened in Connecticut is that it's such a short hop from New York.
Right.
And that's the at the heart of its success. I mean, it's been brilliantly run, and I suspect the tribe running it are just a bunch of geniuses. But location was everything. Is there the potential for a casino to do something similar on a border where it would be close to a nearby city that is not in its state?
Yeah, I think that's what the Meghalaya government is doing, the third state which I talked about. So there is a highway in Meghalaya, and one side of the road is Assam, which is a huge state in Northeast. Another side is Meghalaya. So there is a very porous border, and that's exactly the plan how to do it in Meghalaya, where residents from Assam, which is, and it's just half an hour from the capital city and the airport of Assam. So people from all over Northeast and other parts of India can easily come there. There are 5-star properties nearby, and it would target the rest of India, particularly eastern and northeastern region.
That could be huge.
It has a great potential for sure. Of course, as I said, there is a lot of dissenting and opposition voices. So even this plan of the government has been opposed by the local groups. It's a Christian state. 90% of the population in Meghalaya is Christian. And mm-hmm. all the churches and Christian groups in that particular state have actually opposed this plan. So there has been a lot of pushback, but there is negotiation and lobbying going on, as you would imagine.
Well, the thing is, Jay, when you factor sports betting into that as well,
yes,
the potential goes through the roof.
Right. And in Meghalaya, the beauty is, unlike the other states, there is no requirement of a 5-star license or a ship or anything like that. You can just have a standalone property and a standalone casino or a sportsbook shop.
But when these groups see what you can do with that tax money, as long as it's regulated sensibly and well, and regulations are enforced on the government side, there's no reason that the tax dollars that come in can't transform the state.
I tend to agree with you, but probably a lot of people won't buy into what we are saying, because the income levels are probably not at par with Europe or USA, and mm-hmm. There have been instances, disturbing instances, where a lot of people, the laborers or the taxi drivers, they too go into the casinos. And, even if they lose $1,000 or $500, it is their entire monthly income. And there have been unfortunate instances also. And probably responsible gaming is something which none of the casinos follow well. none of the casinos have any policy for responsible gaming. And so such reckless incidents actually where people are probably also not mature enough because this activity is new to them. So there have been some instances where people have lost everything, taken on loans and so on, as I imagine happens everywhere, but it's probably happened more often than one would want to see in India. And that mm-hmm. is one of the reasons why everyone is hesitant when any such proposal is brought in any state in the country.
But proper regulate, I mean, you know, the software exists, the ability exists to, you know, they've got a clean slate to start, and they can, yeah. The thing that gets me, I was talking with a friend of mine, an old school friend. He popped over to visit me. He was in town. He lives in Canada. And there was talk of a casino in the region where he lives.
Right.
And he was part of the groups that were protesting against it. And he was disgusted that I work on a gambling industry magazine.
Yeah. And this is something I wanted to ask you guys, actually, that have you seen any instance where your proposal for casino or online gambling or sports betting or whatever is actually welcomed without any pushback or opposition in any part of the world? Because I see pushback happening everywhere in the news.
There is always a lot of pushback, but you see it more in areas where the church, or where people like to say that the church still wields power.
Right. Or any other religious institute for that matter.
You've only got to look at what happened in Russia and, in Moscow, well, in fact, in all of Russia, but it's particularly bad in Moscow, they suddenly said, right, you can't have any gaming within 100 meters of a church or a school.
Right.
Well, you can't go anywhere in Moscow where there isn't a church or a school. So that was just effectively their way of shutting it down. But the church still wields tremendous power in Russia. People like to think that the church wields tremendous power in America, but it's actually one of those things where the church wields tremendous power when it aligns with what its people actually want.
There's a funny anecdote I heard about America with
this. It better be funny now.
It is funny. So when the legalization of online gambling at the state level in the US, like New Jersey, Pennsylvania, etc., there's a carve out. So if you take New Jersey and Pennsylvania, where online gambling, so online casinos, not just sports betting, but online casinos allowed, online bingo, and I think up until only recently, wasn't allowed. So there was an exception for online bingo. And the anecdote was, it's because the local churches in each parish in the state use bingo nights as a way of raising money. And they were worried, the church was worried that if online bingo was allowed, they'd lose this revenue stream. And so they lobbied all politics is local, they lobbied the politicians to get the exception for online bingo. So even in America.
Even in America. I mean, anything bonkers is always going to start in America, isn't it? I'm not to any American listeners. I didn't just say that. That was Fenton. Anywhere where the church is still active, and I'm not saying that it's an issue with religious people. I'm just saying that sometimes responses are about fear and ignorance.
I'll just give you one anecdote. 2012 or thereabouts, like 8-10 years back, there is a state in the north called Punjab, which has majority Sikh population of the Sikh religion. Mm-hmm. And there the chief minister of the state was an old person, but his son was the deputy chief minister, and he was quite young and forward-looking. So he wanted to just create a Vegas-like strip with malls, you know, everything including casinos, restaurants, and so on. Hotels in a place called Ludhiana, where he wanted to make that like a mini Las Vegas. And the Gurudwaras were there, the religious temples, and they are very strong. So they just issued some kind of threat and about protesting, and immediately the plan was dropped. And it was never taken up by any government, and there have been three governments since then. Nobody ever decided to pick that up. Even the plan to have a race course was stopped just because of this. So, I mean, that's how powerful religious institutions are. I mean, probably anywhere in the world, right?
Yeah, although they dress up in different gowns and headdresses.
It's actually really simple. It's typically older people who are more religious, and older people vote more. So when you look at kind of voter turnout as well.
And what are the key demographics in Las Vegas? Older people.
Yes. Okay.
The big kind of, I don't know what I guess you might call it passive revenue. It's not the best term for it, but I can't think what the best term is. But your slots players, it's the older people. It's the people who are bussed in from the retirement communities, etc. If you go into the locals casinos in Vegas, awful lot of older people. And, you know, it's their social center. It's their, it's, you know, they're going to enjoy the buffet, have a day out with their mates, have a laugh. But I mean, you're quite right in terms of the religious groups. The real zealots tend to be older.
And most of them, actually, I think they are not even amenable to listen to any arguments. It's just that they have made up their mind. And
but as I said, though, yeah, it's partly it is ignorance, partly it is. I realized where I was going with this. Sorry. So I was talking to my mate and he was horrified. And he says, but, you know, what you're going to do is, you know, money talks. I'm like, well, actually, the council issuing the license has way more power than they ever seem to realize. I mean, they can literally state what they want in the licensing regs. They can literally say, well, you know, you're going to have 15 staff juggling meatballs at 10 o'clock in the morning, every day of the year. And, you know, if it's in there, it's got to be done. If it's not done, you lose your license. And there is an enormous amount of power. And what I feel the anti-groups should be doing is they should be focusing their ire on that, focusing their energy on that, and making sure that their community benefits from the existence of the casino. That's where the pressure should be applied.
Absolutely.
Make sure that the casino has to be a force for good in the community.
Absolutely. And just to give you the example of Goa, where casinos became a dominant, you know, or started picking up only 20 years back in the late 2000s, or maybe just 15 years back. They just started from the 90s. But actually became bigger and sort of started attracting crowds since the last 10-15 years. And Goa, you know, it rains heavily for 4 months. It's extremely warm for in this time of the year, 3-4 months. So really the winters is the only season where people used to frequent or visit Goa. And because of the casinos, I think the entire economy now largely depends on casino, the entire tourism sector. And all 12 months of the year, now it's difficult to find any hotel rooms in Goa, at least where in the areas where there are casinos within Goa.
Wow.
And taxi drivers, you know, restaurants, bars, hotels, there is a whole ecosystem of, you know, tens of thousands of people who have got jobs or who actually rely on the casino industry. And although there is some pushback from a few groups still, but now I think most of the people in Goa understand that, you know, this has actually helped the economy. There might be a few issues, but these casinos are here to stay, and they are something which has actually helped transform tourism in the state. So I think once you start this, it's very difficult to unwind, and people will slowly start understanding the benefits. But to just start and convince the people to just give this a look, allow this, and give this a try is the most challenging thing.
Yeah, definitely. What kind of games are popular? So you say electronic gaming in the 5-star hotels. Right. So I'm assuming you're talking about electronic roulette and probably electronic card games, you know, digital poker, all that kind of thing.
Right.
What kind of live games are popular?
So in live games, one of the most popular games is a game called Teen Patti, which is close to 3-card poker along with its many variations. So Teen Patti, it's a local game. It's extremely popular in the casinos. Another game, it's a very simple game of which way the card will fall, called Andar Bahar. That is also extremely popular in the casino. Apart from that, roulette is also there. Roulette is extremely popular. Some slots, although not that popular. Baccarat, blackjack, poker, etc. All these games are there. But I think Andar Bahar, Teen Patti and roulette are the three more popular games.
What was that last one, Jay?
Andar Bahar, Teen Patti and roulette.
Okay. That's interesting. So, I mean, it's a fairly international mix then in terms of games.
Yeah, yeah.
It's interesting.
Only these two games are kind of, you know, local games, which are, but they draw the maximum crowd. Andar Bahar and Teen Patti.
Is back betting allowed? You know, when you're sitting and you're playing and somebody is allowed to bet on your hand behind you.
I don't think that is, I haven't seen that at least happening.
Okay.
It's not common, no.
Yeah, it's pretty unnerving when you're playing as well.
Yeah. I mean, maybe there are some side bets between the players, but I have not seen that happening there.
Okay. I was playing, I found a blackjack table in Macau one night. And I thought, I'll just have a bit of a play because I had awful jet lag. And so I'm just sitting playing and I'm winning. I'm playing a very, very conservative game and I'm winning. And suddenly all this money starts appearing in front of me and I'm like, oh, what am I going to, I'm going to lose now. I know I am. But it's the very simple thing and one of the wonderful things about when you watch Chinese players is they follow luck. And they saw me winning and they thought, well, he's going to win some more now. They were very badly disappointed. They won nothing. Going back to sports betting, you were talking about sports betting in Meghalaya and I think in Sikkim as well.
In Sikkim as well, there is legalized sports betting and casino games.
Okay, is that sports betting on site or is that online as well?
So it's actually the regulations and the law actually calls it online. But since it's a state subject, the federal government has told them you cannot have your system in a way that your online gaming or sports betting actually crosses the boundaries of your state. So it's actually through internet in shops. So although it's called online, it's actually on-site.
Okay, so you've got a terminal in a shop. Yeah, somebody can walk in and make a bet on it.
Absolutely, that's what it is.
That's interesting.
And again, locals are not allowed in this as well.
Wow. Okay.
And it's going to be the same in Meghalaya. It's already happening in Sikkim, and it's going to be the same in Meghalaya.
Yeah, it's quite difficult to get your head around that. But, I mean... What would be interesting with when they issue those new licenses is if somebody does a full on sportsbook experience, if somebody does a Vegas style sportsbook experience where you can go in, you can have a bite to eat, there's a bar or whatever, there's some nice seats, big screens, it's a big social experience.
That's already happening to a much smaller level in Sikkim.
But yeah, it's have you seen any of the Circa development in Vegas?
No, I've not been to Vegas, so I wouldn't know. But
I haven't seen this one in the flesh. I've only seen pictures of it. I'm hopefully going to see it later this year.
Okay.
So it's new casino on Fremont Street, so it's not on the Strip. But one of the key things that they've done in this new development is the sports book is absolutely magnificent. Mm-hmm. It's like they saw what could be improved all around them. And they absolutely smashed it out of the park. They've done a beautiful sports book. And I think what Circa have done, that's going to be the template for sports books from now on. So have a look for it. I think it would not surprise me if the audience is there, and it sounds like it is, if somebody builds that on the border, it will be, you know, if you build it, they will come kind of thing.
Right.
It'll be, the potential's huge. Because, of course, the thing with a big sports book, even if you're using betting terminals, you can get a lot of people in.
Yeah.
It's that simple. Because fundamentally, the business model, no matter where you are, it's all about volume.
Yeah.
But anyway, sorry, I digress slightly. Online, what's going on there?
Right. So online, all the states except Sikkim and Meghalaya, which is not really online in that sense, have actually prohibited online gambling, or actually the law is a little vague. But there is a catch over here as well, which is that there is an exemption or a safe harbor for games of skill in the law. And what is a game of skill, what is not a game of skill, is not defined in most of the states. And it is left for the courts to decide. So the court back in the 1960s had held that Rummy, which is a 13-card game, is a game of skill and can be played. It's not gambling. And following that, various companies started online Rummy, and then they started Daily Fantasy. Then there is online poker, there is Ludo, there is all sorts of games that are happening under the garb of online skill-based games, which is for real money, which is for you can bet or you can put your money on such online skill-based games. And that is something which is massively caught up in India. That is something that has become huge. In fact, there are three or four companies which have crossed a valuation of $1 billion in this online skill-based gaming space. And that is led by a company called Dream 11, which is into daily fantasy sports and has more than, I think, 140 million users across the country. And its last valuation was $8 billion. And the entire online skill-based game market is worth, I think, around $1.5 billion currently, but it's on its way to become, to reach the $5 billion mark in the next 3 or 4 years.
Wow! So it's so the skill. So to just make sure I've understood, the skill-based gaming is allowed. So the Rummy type card games, the fantasy sports or fantasy cricket, I'm presuming is the big one.
Yeah.
These are all allowed, and there's some huge valuations on there. Are they allowed in all states, or is it only, or are there some exceptions?
I mean, there are 4 or 5 states which do not allow it, and 2 or 3 states which tried to ban it recently, but the high courts of that state had actually struck down the ban, saying you can't ban online skill-based games, under the constitution. And so they are back over there. There is a matter pending in the Supreme Court, appeals from these states, and some other matters are pending in various states. So it is little bit of a gray area, or an area where there is some debate, some litigation. But in 23 or 24 out of all the states, it's actually allowed. And it's going on right now. It will, of course, be subject to what the Supreme Court and other courts still decide. But as of now, whatever court verdicts have come in favor of these online games, online gaming companies. And so it's all good so far.
Sure. And I suppose two follow-on questions to that is, A, are they allowed to advertise? Let's say the fantasy cricket, they're allowed to advertise around... on TV or advertise around cricket.
There is the IPL happening right now, the Indian Premier League, which is the biggest cricket league, the local cricket league, where all the all you see in the advertisements is fantasy cricket and rummy and poker and these sort of things. It's huge. All the celebrities are endorsing it. Sportspersons are endorsing it. It's huge. There are some guidelines by a self-regulatory body under the government, which need you to put a disclaimer, and you can or cannot say certain things like, make your livelihood out of such games, etc. So there are certain guidelines, but advertising is Okay. They are the biggest advertisers of the sports league.
Got it. Because it sounds very similar then to, say, the UK, where, you know, if you're watching football, it's just, you know, all the major sports books are just advertising.
Or US until a while back, where DraftKings and FanDuel were all around.
Exactly.
Or I don't know if it's still there, but yeah.
They are, and people are complaining. So the next question is...
So they are in India. I mean, there is a lot of debate and discussion happening on whether they should be banned, what should be done. So there are various kinds of things going on, including court cases. But yeah, right now it's all over for sure.
Understood. The next question then is these large, like the market, some of these large companies you've mentioned, are they all Indian companies, or is it a mix of Indian companies and international companies?
I mean, they are all Indian companies. They've got funding from, you know, Sequoias and Tiger Globals and various kind of foreign investors. They are Indian companies. Although I will add one more thing, that there are a lot of offshore gambling and betting brands that are also advertising in India heavily, either under a surrogate brand of a news website or, you know, even directly. Although that is not legal as per me, they are violating several laws, but they are offshore, and so far the government has not acted upon it. But there are a lot of offshore brands also advertising all over the place.
Because that was going to be my next topic. Because obviously you've got this legal market around the skill-based games, but then when you look at say the quarterly presentations from a lot of, say, European operators, India is one of the growth markets as they see it. So, and then but like, I suppose, you know, and a lot of these guys are, say, Swedish or something like that. They couldn't name a cricket player, but India is a big growth market for them. So I always find that kind of that disconnect a little bit weird and presumptuous. So of these foreign brands or international brands, offshore brands that are targeting India, is it mostly sportsbook and cricket betting? Is that the kind of key product, or is it more casino, or is it something else?
Sportsbook and sportsbook and, of course, cricket is the biggest out of all sports. So cricket betting is the biggest. But even casinos are there to some extent, but cricket betting is the biggest for sure.
Got it. And are they doing good business? Are they popular? Is the market growing for them, or how are they getting on? Can you tell?
I mean, since they are mostly, you know, not doing everything above board, so I wouldn't know the exact numbers. But from what I understand, they are doing great business in India. And you also kind of mentioned that when they make the presentation to their shareholders and so on. So they are doing huge business in India, according to estimates. And a lot of times they use, you know, shady payment methods, or use individuals or other companies to route their payment and so on. So there is a lot of underhand things that are going on with some of these offshore brands. But from anecdotally what I heard, they are doing huge business. Sure.
Got it. And then how important then is things like using Bitcoin as a payment method, or these kind of more crypto Bitcoin type casinos? Is that also as popular, or do like, I suppose, is it a common payment method, deposit method, or would people prefer to deposit otherwise?
I think it's not so common so far. It's mostly through UPI, that is the banking unified transfer. That is the most common method. And apart from that, there are debit cards and credit cards. Crypto is there, but it's not as popular for sure.
Understood. So it's more like, okay, I understand the difference. And are there, because obviously if I'm a regulated skill-based gaming company who's playing by the rules.
They are not regulated in that sense. They have court judgments and so on. They are not regulated by any government as such, but they are complying with the laws in India.
I understand. So they're complying with the laws. They're paying their local companies. They're paying local taxes.
Yeah.
Is there any chance that these offshore brands could be shut down, or payment methods blocked, or websites blocked, or is just there's no interest in tackling the offshore products right now?
No. There is a movement over there. Good question, because only recently the industry body for all these local brands called All India Gaming Federation, they've asked the government and told them that 7 or 8 agencies, federal agencies, should act upon these offshore brands, including, you know, asking them to pay taxes and, you know, blocking their domain names and blocking the advertisements and so on. So the local guys are for sure complaining, and a lot of other stakeholders are also not happy with this total free-for-all and complete advertising and promotion by these offshore brands. So there has been complaint, including very recently, last month itself, there was a letter written to the Prime Minister about it by AIGF, the industry body. And from what I understand, the government is also seriously looking at it, and you might see some action soon in the next few months.
Interesting. Really interesting.
But again, there is no 100% way to stop this, right? I mean, they would take action against the payment methods and against the third parties who are helping them in India. But most of them are located outside. I'm not sure to what extent they can completely stop this. But I mean, there would be some crackdown for sure.
Yeah, it's always one of those things. You can slow it down. You can never completely stop it.
But I think just slowing down is probably something that is going to happen.
Got it. And there's no chance that either at a federal or a state level that online gambling laws could be passed? So if we look to say like what's happening in the US where you've got it on a state by state level?
So to regulate and license it, you mean?
Yeah.
Except one or two smaller states where online gaming is the betting and sports and casino, not the skill-based gaming that is happening in this piecemeal manner with those, shops or terminals. I don't see much progress, for now happening on that front. Because like I said, socially and, that maturity to accept this as an activity and accept the revenue and the jobs and taxes, it's not very well understood by the people and by the politicians so far in India. So it's a longer process, I would say.
Understood. Fantastic. Thank you. That was all my questions. John?
What? You mean I've got to think of more stuff? I've got a question. Jay, have you seen Cobra Kai?
No.
Damn it. So, I don't even know if you're familiar with this. Well,
he's probably too young. He's too young.
Do you know? No, Jay just looks young. He's good. There's a wizened old man inside him. do you know the Karate Kid movies?
Yes.
Okay, so Cobra Kai, it's a Netflix series, and it's like what the people from the Karate Kid are doing now. And it's really good. And we've just been canvassing guests to find out how many people are watching Cobra Kai. And so far, there's me. Fintan's just started watching it. I think one other guest. And that's it. So either Netflix are lying about their viewing figures, or the gambling industry is just not that interested in the Karate Kid.
I'll just look it up now that you've told me.
It's very good.
I look it up for sure.
We've been asking some guests recently about 1980s action films, but you're definitely too young for that.
I think that. Yeah.
I mean, it would just be a lot.
Yeah, I am.
but actually, I have some friends who are aficionados of Indian action movies.
Right.
Because I don't know if you're aware of this, Fintan, but basically Indian cinema ignores all international copyright law.
Brilliant.
And so anything that's been a big hit elsewhere is usually remade and with great zeal. And there are some extraordinarily fun films coming out of India. I mean, obviously, like any country, there's some really, really high quality stuff, but there's some stuff that is just like really kind of campy and hilarious. And I can't think of a good example off the top of my head now. I'm going to have to contact my friends and say, what did we watch?
I'll definitely need some recommendations.
You won't believe your eyes. Yeah, you really won't. They are fabulous. So anyway, digressed a little bit there. Jay, thank you so much for joining us. What we tend to do on this podcast is when we speak to somebody, if they don't seem to hate us, they become our resident experts for that area. So if you don't mind coming back on when there are developments in India, that would be awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. I would. It was great being here, and I would love to be back. Yeah, anytime.
Fabulous. Fantastic. Don't forget, so anybody that's interested in what's going on in India, the website Gateway to Gaming, Gateway to Gaming. What's the website?
G2G. So G and then to the digit and G dot news. So G2G.news is the website.
G2G.news for, interesting stuff about what's going on in Indian gambling. And yeah, it sounds like there's some genuinely very exciting times ahead. It's going to be very, very interesting.
And one thing I actually forgot to mention earlier.
What?
Is on taxes. Casinos, online gaming, race courses, which are going on in India. There is a committee to look at taxes for these industries. And they are looking. So currently there is a 28% tax, but whether it will be on the GGR or the full bet value is something the committee and then the GST council, which comprises of all states, is going to look at. So if they really are not interested in letting this industry go on or flourish, then they would probably impose a 28% tax. But that also not on the GGR, but on the full bets that are happening, which is probably not seen anywhere in the world. And you guys can talk more if there is any jurisdiction which has a tax on the bet and not on the GGR. So that is something that we might see some development in the next few months.
Good question. In the UK, when you place a bet, or when it used to be done that way, you had the option of paying the tax on the bet. And so there was no tax on the winnings. That was a long time ago, though.
What percentage was it?
I can't remember. I mean, this is decades ago. It's like 25 years ago.
And now it's on GGR, yeah?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And obviously, I mean, New York's got an incredibly high tax rate, but that's on GGR.
Right. So on GGR, it would still be okay because in India, it's a seamless now taxation system where you get input for the tax you've paid, which you can set off. So 28% within that will get in your
input. 28% on GGR would be pretty healthy. Most of the big companies will look at that and go, okay, I'll have a bit of that.
Yeah.
And New York's 50 something.
Yeah, and plus you get the input credit of the taxes you have paid. So it's actually not 28. It's So 28 on GGR is something which is already there, which people are okay. But if it's on the bet value, 28, it's really going to be bad news.
Just going to be a sideways way of shutting it down.
Yeah, sideways way of shutting it down, or it would continue with most of the income going unreported, And there will be court cases and things like that for sure. So we'll have to see how that goes in the next 3-4 months. That will be clear.
That is definitely one to come back on to discuss. Right. Brilliant. Thank you, Jay.
Thanks, Jay.
We'll see you next time.
Yeah. Thank you so much, John and Fintan, for having me. It was great chatting.
Appreciate it.
And we move on to our second and I think probably final guest today, which is the returning, the multi-episode appearing in Jennifer Gaynor.
Hi, guys.
Hello. Jennifer is, of course, the principal and founder of J. Gaynor Law in Las Vegas. And she comes to us with scurrilous rumors and gossip from the Strip. Well, obviously that's what lawyers do, isn't it?
Always. Well, in Las Vegas.
I would hope so. Hey, have you got a billboard?
I don't have a billboard, but I don't do that kind of law. I do gaming and licensing and all sorts of boring administrative stuff.
You know, can we design your billboard?
Yeah, it is that kind of law.
No,
all law.
Well, I don't get clients from billboards. You know, it's referrals and word of mouth.
That's only because you haven't tried.
I don't know that that's the clients I would want.
Can we create a jingle for you?
You can. Please do.
John's got a great, amazing voiceover voice. Like it's an entire career he's missed. Go on, John.
Yeah,
drop some.
I would love to give us something.
Give us a line.
Just give me a bit of time to think about it, right? Because you know, magic, it can take a little while.
We'll come back to this. We'll circle back to this one at the end, then, right? We're gonna link it all together.
Yeah, just ruminate while we talk.
Because I've had like a minor sort of chest infection for a few weeks, so I'm not sure how deep I can get today. But I'm going to go for it, Jennifer.
Hey, do you need some law? Try Jennifer Gaynor. She'll law the fucking shit out of you.
What? Why is your accent American?
Because everybody knows that, like, if you want to be taken seriously, you have an American accent.
No, that's not true. In America, we think that people with British accents are really smart, and you know, we look up to them. So, you know, go with it.
Okay. I say, do you need some law? If you do, Jennifer Gaynor will law the fucking shit out of you.
Take my money. That's it. It worked. It worked. No, you're right. The English version is way better than the American version.
It is.
And there's your billboard right there.
Law the shit.
I will just law the effing S out of you.
Mm-hmm. Just, you know, you're pointing your finger down the lens of the camera as they're taking the picture. I will law the fucking shit out of you. It's not aggressive. It's assertive.
Excellent. You can be my manager, John. How's that?
Do you know what? I have so little work on at the moment.
Yeah, because if you think of the visuals then, right? So there'd be like the smoke machine in the background. And then like the camera is close to face. And then it pans back slightly when she points. Yeah, this could work really well.
Yeah, it could. Think of it like when you see adverts on TV for magic shows. I see you in something a little... Imagine an outfit that Liberace would have turned down.
Sparkles, rhinestones.
A lot of sequins, some really gaudy jewelry. Imagine Elvis at his very worst. If he and Liberace had somehow had a child, they've designed your outfit, rhinestones, all that shit. And we're just maybe seeing you from the back, like in Rocky Horror Picture Show, when Frankenfurter is introduced and you get the glimpses of him as he's coming down in the lift and you see the stilettos doing the rhythm. It'd be like that. And then the camera pulls back and you turn around and go, I will love the shit out of you.
There you go. Not to pivot, but speaking about rhinestones and sparkle in Vegas, I did, you know, you want to know what's going on in Vegas. I should tell you, I have a client who has a brand new show that just opened at the Stratosphere. It's called Rouge, and it's the sexiest show in Las Vegas, so you need to check it out.
When you say sexiest, are we talking like wipe clean seating kind of sexiest?
We're talking about, you know, topless, whips, stuff like that. Very fun.
What's the name of the show?
It's called Rouge.
Rouge?
Rouge.
At the
Stratosphere.
Oh, Stratosphere, sorry.
Which, and I've got to visit the Stratosphere when I'm at G2E because I think they've nailed the refurb. I think they've done a really good job, and I need to see it in the flesh because it's always had so much potential, but it was just left to fester for so long.
They've done the remodel. It looks a lot better, but yeah, when you're in town, let's go see the show. It'll be fun.
The sexiest show in Vegas. It's not just a show; it's a journey of seduction and adult adventure, designed to unleash everyone's fantasy. John, you're not old enough for this. I'm sorry. This is adults only, mate.
No, that's fair. I've been known to shout inappropriate things.
This is combines sexpertise with acrobats, aerialists, dancers, contortionists, comedians, hand balancers, and more.
Hand balancers?
Well, it's the "and more" that gets me. So, like, yeah, what else?
Presumably
what else?
Foot balancers.
What else could you do? Like, what's left?
Roller skates, poles, condoms. You'll see.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Okay, no, I'm in.
John's intrigued.
So we do need to talk about an opening, and I don't mean it that way. Jesus, I could have said, "Oh shit, can I share a story with you two?" I'm sorry if I've shared this one before. I always worry about repeating stories. Okay. Stop me if I've told you this, Fintan. Right, a friend of mine used to work on the Fantasy Channel, with Television X.
In front or behind the camera?
Both. And he was working for they were essentially a porn publisher called Northern and Shell. And they launched this adult fantasy channel. And he became their sports presenter. So he'd be commenting on anything from topless darts to nude jelly wrestling to their brilliantly titled Tiddly Winks. You know, anything that you could put nudity in, they were doing it. And they had topless boxing. And in their topless boxing, right, they had two fighters, but the corner team was also topless women. And I will never forget this as long as I live, because I was crying with laughter when I saw it. I was around at his house and this is a long time ago. I was getting drunk and stoned and watching his latest video. This is how long ago it was. And you know, the bell goes for the end of the round, and the fighters go to their corners, and they put the stool out, and the fighter sits on the stool, and the lady goes to tend to the fighter, you know, swill the mouth out, sponge the face down. She did that, and she squatted down as she did it. Of course, she was wearing a G-string. And as she squats down, Al just goes, "Oh, I can see a nasty gash opening up there."
Oh, no.
It just came out of the blue, and it floored me. Comedy, he's so very funny. He actually, hosts the, I think it's the top music podcast in the country now, in the UK, in which he and a couple of his mates watch old episodes of Top of the Pops, a classic British chart show, Jennifer. And then they just talk about it for 3 hours. And it is a very, very funny podcast.
I have to check that out.
I can't remember what it's called, though, which is really annoying me. Anyway, so there's been a new opening in Las Vegas, not on the Strip, but it is a very significant property, Palms. So what's going on with that?
Well,
why is everybody so excited?
Well, the Palms, I mean, it was the hot place in the noughties, you know, the early 2000s. And it was like the MTV place. It's where they had all the big pool parties, all the early 2000s famous people, you know, like Pamela Anderson, Paris Hilton, Samuel Jackson, you know, would be there. And, you know, the Jersey Shore folks, you know. Very strong Jersey Shore ties to the Palms. So it was hip and happening. And then, you know, we had the recession in Las Vegas. Things kind of went downhill, and the Palms closed for the pandemic, and it's been closed for a couple years. So everyone's exciting to see development, to see it opening back again. So they were purchased by the San Manuel Band of Indians. So it's actually the first tribally owned property in Las Vegas. So that's also exciting and newsworthy.
So where's the tribe from?
That's a good question. Where are they originally from? I'm not sure.
I'm going to look it up while you talk.
Look it up.
are there tribal casinos in Nevada?
There are, but not, you know, in Las Vegas on the Strip. They're, you know, smaller off-strip properties. There's a lot of tribal casinos, obviously, in California, Arizona, you know, other states around us. But Las Vegas, because it had been so heavily developed and so corporate, you know, you don't see as many tribal ownership here. Though, you know, we are having another property on the strip be purchased by the Seminoles. They're going to have the Hard Rock where the Mirage was. That deal hasn't fully closed yet. I think it's going to close later this year. And that will be the first tribally owned property on the strip.
That will be, it's a great location. And that north end of the strips, I said this, I think when I had Michael Boteto on, which might have been my old podcast, that the only thing SLS really got wrong was the timing when that opened. Because if you think the Strat's refurbished, Genting's opened, there's the concert venue up the top now as well. Mirage is going to be redeveloped, etc. And it's the north end of the strip is going to be absolutely buzzing.
And the Fontainebleau supposedly, I think, is going to open 2024, finally.
Possibly. Is that the one where you could see all the rebar and everything still sticking out last time I was there?
Yeah, the really tall blue one.
Okay. Well, that'd be nice.
Well, you can see they've been working on it. You know, it had been just kind of like a hulking shell for a long time. But it seems like they've been working on it again. So, you know, fingers crossed that's actually true.
Palms is like, you haven't been to Vegas, have you, Fintan?
I've been to Vegas once. I was at G2E. Not the last one, the one before.
Okay, so Palms has got like, if you go, was it the Moonlight Bar that it was called? It was like a 29th floor bar with a glass. Oh, yeah, it might have been that actually, yeah. Because I wouldn't have gone in there, but TCS had a do there. They didn't do G2E for some reason. And so they just hired the bar. And everybody went and visited them there and it's like 29th floor. But the view of the strip from that bar is just magnificent. It's like the best view of the strip from anywhere except the mountains, probably.
Oh, it is. And the Palms, and they still have all the fantasy suites intact. One of my friends works for San Manuel. And yeah, so, I mean, they're still there. There's like the basketball suite. I'm trying to remember what the other suites are, the fantasy suite. I don't know if you've ever been in any of the Palms fantasy suites, but they're pretty cool. Like, you know, full basketball courts, full bowling alleys, like little personal pools, you know, 30 stories up, that kind of thing.
Wow. No, come on. Am I ever really going to get in one of those? The publishers used to sort out our accommodation whenever we traveled. And I got so sick of staying in such shitty places that I started arranging it. So, you know, we'd stay at like Circus. And we were in the what do they call it? The motor lodges or something out the back of Circus. And that was like, oh my God. The air conditioning just smelled of 20-year-old cigarettes. And well, I couldn't open the window.
As I say, Phil Ruffin bought Circus. I think he's been doing improvements to that as well. I know they have some new rides.
There's a lot that's good about Circus, but the motor lodges were not one of those things. And I phoned the front desk. And I'm like, I'm really sorry. The aircon absolutely stinks. And I can't open the window. Can you like get somebody to help me with this window? And they're like, well, no, you can't open the windows. I'm like, why not?
Well, there's a reason for that.
Why? It was on the ground floor.
Maybe not on the ground floor, but on the higher floors, it's air conditioning. And it's also, you know, so people don't jump.
Oh, yeah, the not jumping bit I get, but I was on the ground floor and I was saying this, but I'm on the ground floor. What am I going to do? Sprain my ankle? Come on.
Well, I mean, security, I guess.
I'm a very secure individual.
You could be smuggling stuff in the window, perhaps.
I guess, but I mean, seriously, you're in Vegas. What are you going to smuggle? It's all legal.
It's not all legal. I mean, well, not everywhere. Like prostitution's not legal in Las Vegas.
Is it not? That's surprising because they're fucking everywhere.
There's the trucks driving up and down the strip.
Those aren't prostitutes.
Are they?
They're exotic dancers for hire. They do tuition, all kinds of things.
It's like that could help me with my homework kind of thing, is it?
Atmosphere models, you have it. Yes, we have those, but we do not have prostitutes legally in Las Vegas. You have to go to Pahrump.
So a happy ending when you hire one of these tutors is that you get a good grade in your subsequent exam.
So she hasn't maxed out your credit card, I think, is the actual happy ending.
Yeah, yeah, that too.
Yeah, don't take a shower and leave them in your room, right?
Do you know what the plan is for the Palms then? I mean, are they doing any, have they done anything interesting? Have they been working on the property?
I mean, working on the property, yeah. So I think Stations had purchased it, you know, it's somewhere there in the 2000s, and they'd done a bit of a remodel. So I think it's already in great shape. So I don't know as far as like themes or plans, you know, if there's anything particular other than just reopening the property, which is lovely.
Yeah, it's a good spot. Speaking of property, there has been significant, it's not a massive parcel of land that's been bought, but it's in a hell of a location on the strip by that nice Mr. Fertitta.
Yes, yes. He purchased about 6 acres for a little more than $200 million down in the south end of the strip.
So how many acres was that? Sorry?
6 acres.
Jesus Christ. $200 million for 6 acres.
Well, an acre on the Las Vegas Strip is worth a lot more than an acre pretty much anywhere else.
Yeah, but that,
is it for the Formula One? Is it for the pit lane in the Formula One?
So that's another purchase. Yes. So there's also the Formula One. So the folks who are doing that.
They've bought somewhere, but that's not on the Strip.
Oh, okay.
It's like right behind the Strip. So. And let's see, I think it was
You say it's right behind the strip, but you know what? There's a 24-hour porn superstore right behind the strip. You know, I mean, the land is definitely cheaper there. It's just behind Circus Circus, if anybody needs a pointer to it. I made the mistake of going out the wrong entrance, walking into a bar that was quite clearly a front for something else. And, yeah,
oh, you went into a bar on Industrial behind Circus Circus? Don't do that.
Yeah, well, I know that now. But I had a lovely chat with the bar lady.
So just in case I'm ever in Vegas again, and just so I don't accidentally walk into the wrong bar, what should I be looking for on the strip?
Just behind Circus Circus.
just don't wander too far and you'll be all right.
Yeah, don't go off the strip. I've made that mistake myself.
Exactly. But yes, the property that Fertitta bought, it's at Las Vegas Boulevard in Harmon. It's right by Planet Hollywood, like across from the Bellagio. It's kind of like in that really built up core of, you know, South Las Vegas Boulevard. You know, the rumor is he's going to do a high end property, probably true. So it's exciting to see development there.
Yeah, but you know, it's only 6 acres. So he's going to have to build high if it's going to be any kind of, you know, any kind of sexy property. And being only 6 acres, I mean, you know, like when you're in the Wynn, actually, Joe, thinking about it, you know, the Cromwell, which was Bill's. I remember staying in Bill's one year and looking out the back and thinking, Jesus, that is a big car park. And there was this massive car park out the back of Bill's. And I remember looking at that and thinking, well, you could fit this entire casino into that about 8 times. And the car park was actually for the Wynn staff. It was like just the staff car park for the Wynn was like, it was just massive. So, you know, parking's a big factor when they build these properties. If you've only got 6 acres, he's either got to dig down or, God, I don't know.
I'm sure it'll make it work, or perhaps it's going to be more of a boutique luxury property. I guess we'll see.
Like the Cromwell, which I haven't actually been in because they don't do karaoke there now.
Is that like your standard for going into a property, karaoke?
Well, I used to stay at Bill's back when I used to drink, and I did partake in karaoke there one night. Unfortunately, I was very drunk.
So here's the important question then. Go to karaoke song. What is it?
Well, probably
Baby One More Time.
No, that's a good shout. I'd be much more likely to go for Toxic. But actually, my go-to in terms of what's just about right for me to sing is the Black Crowes version of Hard to Handle. And so I get up on stage and, you know, I've got the microphone and a song kicks off and I go, Las Vegas, are you ready to rock? And they weren't.
Oh, no.
They really, really weren't. In fact, some people actually looked away. You know that thing where you are hideously embarrassed and you kind of cover your eyes and look away?
Oh, but you kind of peek through your fingers because you can't stop looking at the same time.
No, they definitely stopped looking.
Well, John, if you like karaoke, next time you're in Las Vegas, I should take you to Dino's.
Thing is, though, Americans take karaoke really seriously, and English people really don't.
I disagree with that, John. Yes, everybody takes karaoke seriously.
No. These guys. So there was a woman who did a Roberta Flack song, and she nailed it. Roberta Flack. A guy did Glenn Campbell. He actually did Wichita Lineman. Knocked it out of the park. But you know what? It was really boring.
You've got to go for songs that people are going to sing along with you.
But
that's the karaoke shortcut.
But it's not about, you know, it's not about how close to the original record you are or whatever, you know. It's just really, it's like if I wanted it to listen to this perfect, I would have just put the record on. I want your interpretation.
Which is why I'll always just go straight to Bohemian Rhapsody.
No, that's fair. Yeah, it's a good shout.
And absolutely butcher it, but get the crowd with you.
Singing along. Yep.
Or, depending on how drunk I am, anything by the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and I end up in my boxer shorts. That's my other
Or a sock. Quote. Or a sock.
Okay. Yeah. If it's one of their older albums, you've got to go for the sock.
Oh, that idea is in my head now. That's a mistake. But yeah. Or the sock.
Please change the subject, John. Please.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, you don't want to know where my brain is going with that. So, but Fintan has touched on something else that is really exciting about what's going on around the strip now. And I speak as somebody who does not give the faintest of fucks about this sport, the Grand Prix. That is quite exciting. I mean, like, it's going to be spectacular, right? Nighttime race.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to be racing
Strip.
Right down the Las Vegas Strip. I mean, how can you?
Because you've got some. So I'm unlike John. I actually quite like Formula One. So you've got the. So F1 has finally cracked America. All thanks to the Netflix Drive to Survive show, if you haven't seen it. So even if you don't like F1, Drive to Survive is actually quite good. The Austin Grand Prix is now a sellout. They had Miami at the weekend, which was also a sellout. It was a bit, the race was entertaining, but apparently a lot of the VIP hospitality stuff was a bit of a mess. It wasn't the normal hospitality crowd. But overall, it was a entertaining race. And I think Las Vegas is just going to be an absolute blowout. I think it'll just be the must-see race in America, or actually probably one of the must-see races on the calendar, just behind places like Monaco and actually probably Monaco, because even Singapore and stuff, it's probably not as exciting as Vegas.
But in terms of track and spectacle and all that, I mean, how does Macau stack up?
There's no race in Macau.
Well, there was.
It hasn't been a race in Macau in a long time.
Well, I remember going out there one year and they just had the race and I couldn't get to my friggin' hotel.
Well, you're going to get that anywhere when there's a city race.
It's quite annoying, though.
But you've got Singapore, you've got Malaysia, there's the China. So there's plenty of races in Asia now. But I think a night, since Singapore led the way with they were the first night race,
And now a lot of the Middle Eastern countries have copied it as well because of issues with heat during the day. But I think in terms of, because if you think of Dubai and Saudi Arabia and stuff, they're probably not as, they're definitely not party cities compared to Vegas. You've got the proximity to California and stuff as well. So I think you're just going to have a massive VIP celebrity party weekend. I think it'll be phenomenal.
Yes. Yes. Don't try to drive anywhere or go anywhere. Just stay home.
Yeah, I think it'll be, yeah. And then when you think about it, then if you look at Vegas from like, okay, they've got a Formula One race, they've got the NFL franchise, they've got the ice hockey franchise. Like, it's just phenomenal now for sports.
It is.
What's interesting about the Formula One thing, though, just to stay on this just for another second, is in order to make the Vegas race even more appealing to Americans, they're all going to be in automatics.
Oh, stop. For the true record, I can drive a stick.
Yeah, I'm not sure I believe you. But Jennifer, yeah, Fintan's dead right. I mean, Vegas has gone from no top level professional sport teams to all of them.
Well, yes. I mean, for a long time, you know, a lot of the professional leagues were very hesitant to bring sports to Las Vegas because they thought, you know, it might corrupt the teams, et cetera, et cetera. But now look at us, you know, 2017, we got the National Hockey League with the Golden Knights. 2020, we got the NFL with the Raiders. Just a few weeks ago, we hosted the NFL draft. In 2024, we're going to host the Super Bowl. I mean, what more do you need?
It's not bad.
You just need a NASCAR race as well, and you've got everything.
Yeah, I'm going to go left, and I'm going to go left. I'm going to go left.
And I'm not a racing expert, but don't we have NASCAR already?
I don't know.
Actually, I could be completely wrong. I just assumed you didn't. Las Vegas NASCAR. I'm furiously Googling it as we speak now. I take it back. You've already got, this is Las Vegas Motor Speedway. I'm an idiot. That's it. Vegas has got everything. And it makes, but from a, if you kind of look at the way, from a Vegas perspective, it's phenomenal because historically, or even now, it's obviously conferences are one of the key drivers. But now if you've also got a sporting calendar on top of that, it's just extra reasons to travel to Vegas. It's, you know, and you've got obviously you've got the UFC as well, which is, massive as well.
I'd be like, what are you going to Vegas for, John? And I'd be, I used to go there for work, but now I go there for the sport and the extra tuition I can get.
There you go.
But possibly tied into the professional sports, possibly not. Dead bodies in Lake Mead.
Yes. So did that news make its way across the pond?
It did.
We're so proud. You know, everything happens in Las Vegas. I mean, sadly, we're suffering from record droughts this year. So Lake Mead has gotten lower than it's been in a very long time. And the dead bodies are bobbing to the surface left and right. We actually had two just this week.
Wow. That's good. I mean, that's yeah. I wonder if Jimmy Hoffa's remains are going to, you know, maybe the skeleton's down there somewhere.
They could. Well, one of them was found in a barrel with gunshot wounds. So, you know, it could be Jimmy. You don't know.
But to be fair, though, that barrel could have been attacking somebody. Mm-hmm. And it just, you know, if it's self-defense, it's fair enough, right? I'm pretty sure that's how it works over there.
The Dutch have a thing called magnet fishing, and I think we should introduce it to Las Vegas. So magnet fishing is where you get a fishing rod, you get a really strong magnet, and you go to the canals and you drop your magnet on a string into the canal, and then you fish for like scrap metal, so bikes, shopping trolleys, bits of stuff that's been thrown in the canal.
Whoa.
And it's a way of making money, and kids will go out. And they'll go magnet fishing to make some extra pocket money.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Jennifer?
Well, you can just go dead body fishing. I think they have a reward out for people who recover bodies from Lake Mead.
It would be quite amusing if your magnet could just lift them out by the fillings. or somebody's coming up by their pacemaker. So I think there's a market there. Jennifer, if you could do a bit of research for us as a friend of the podcast, research buying fishing rods in bulk, buying very strong magnets in bulk, and see how much you think we could get away with charging for car parking at Lake Mead.
How much is the reward for finding a dead body?
It's like 20 grand or something.
Yeah, it's not nothing.
Because surely there's like a... There's one of those like Freakonomics type situations where if the reward's too high,
people start killing people.
Encourages, oh, I found a dead body.
Well, maybe they need to have like a limit on it. Like it can't be new dead bodies. It has to be existing dead bodies as of this date.
It can't be more than five in a day.
So somebody's going to go and raid that bodies exhibition. You're going to be taking the bits out of the bodies exhibition, wherever that is now, and just dumping them in the river.
You're going to be hijacking like ambulances and stuff, right?
Yeah, raiding morgues, digging up graves. Yeah,
there's a horror movie in this. I love it.
There's something, yes.
Well, are you tempted to go out and have a bit of a ferret around in Lake Mead?
No, I am not a diver. I don't like diving or having my head underwater that much. So no, not me. Wow. But I have a friend who's an excellent diver. You know, we're trying to convince her that she should come out here and make her fortune.
That would be pretty excellent. Also, I would think that it would be, even if you were looking for a dead body, that it would be a pretty freaky thing to find underwater. I can't think that it would be a nice experience.
Or above water, you know, finding one anywhere, I think would be quite a shock.
Well, I mean, presumably in America, they're just everywhere, aren't they? I mean, if media is to be believed.
Well, I mean, we're all fairly certain that there are hundreds, if not thousands of bodies out in the desert outside Las Vegas, if you really look.
Yeah.
There's got to be, right?
What's your thinking there? Why? I mean, just because?
Well, you know, one, from when Las Vegas was run by the mob, and two, it's a desert, you know, just miles and miles of nothing. I mean, what a great place to put a body, right?
Yeah, it's true. And it's always going to get chewed up by something.
Yeah, or just disintegrate and turn to dust.
I think that's slightly romantic. I mean, there's going to be all sorts of things chewing on your face while you're out there. That they turn into dust. And yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess if you got really lucky. But I think, something's going to eat your face. Jennifer, thank you for bringing us up to date on all things Las Vegas and for the business idea as much as anything. I mean, Fintan, I don't know about you, but I think we should start selling magnet fishing franchises.
It could be our next big thing.
It could be our first big thing.
Sorry, I like to project confidence.
That's good. I appreciate it. Jennifer, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Jennifer.
My pleasure.
Thank you for joining us. If you've enjoyed this episode of The Gambling Files, please find us on Twitter under the handle @GamblingFiles. Find the podcast page on LinkedIn under The Gambling Files Podcast. Come to the website where you can subscribe for updates to new episodes and stuff, which is www.thegamblingfiles.com. And please tell your friends, tell your colleagues, come back, listen again. Cheers.